Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Information discussed in this podcast may be sensitive in nature to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Rebecca Gary, or Becky to most of her friends and family, grew up in Shreveport, Louisiana in the 1960s and 1970s. She was a girly girl who loved makeup, she loved dressing up, and she was boy crazy from a very young age. Unfortunately, this would bring attention from older men, and Becky seemed to enjoy this attention, even as a young teenager. When she was 20 years old, Becky became a mother to a baby girl and eventually moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Becky loved the social life in Baton Rouge. She enjoyed mingling and going to bars with important government officials at that time. She was a social butterfly and she loved living the high life. In 1987, Becky began doing something strange. She began carrying around a manila envelope. And she told her mother that if anything ever happened to her, they could find this envelope taped underneath her mattress. She seemed to indicate that this envelope might hold the clues as to what may have happened to her. When questioned more about it, Becky refused to say. The following year, 1988, something did happen. Becky put her daughter, now age 12, on a Greyhound bus and sent her back to Shreveport on December 18th. She was going to go stay with family, and Becky told her that she would be back up to Shreveport herself as soon as she could wrap things up in Baton Rouge. But Becky never showed up. Weeks went by, including the holidays, and no one could reach Becky. Everything seemed normal in her apartment when they went to check on her. But when they went to look for that manila envelope, it wasn't there. Becky had vanished, and so did that mysterious envelope. Where is Becky Gary? Hello, and welcome back to the Where Are They podcast and another unsolved missing persons story. Thank you so much for being here and helping us raise awareness of these unsolved cases. Before we dive in today to Becky's story, I want to give a big welcome to our newest Patreon member, Elise A. Thank you for joining us over on Patreon and helping us continue to bring these stories to everyone as much as we possibly can. I first covered Becky's story way back in the early days of this podcast. I think it was 2021, and I always wondered why her story didn't receive more attention than it had. There are some high-profile people involved in Becky's life, and that alone you think would bring more media attention to her disappearance. Or is perhaps that the reason why there was so little attention in her case? In any event, it is time to take a look at Becky's case once again and tell her story, hopefully this time in a better format with more details. Rebecca Pauline Gary was born May 27, 1956, in Shreveport, Louisiana. She grew up there with her mother and three siblings. Rebecca often went by the nickname Becky, so that's what I'm going to be referring to her as here throughout this episode. Becky's father passed away when Becky was only 6 years old, and it really hit her hard. Growing up, she often talked to her mother and her sister about how much she wanted a father figure. She really wished she had a dad. There were even times when Becky told her mom that she wished her mom would remarry so that she could have a dad again. When Becky was a preteen, she began wearing makeup and talking about boys. By age 12, she was sneaking out of the house to meet up with boys. And as her family would learn later, she was also meeting up with older men. This continued on all throughout her teen years as well. Now, Becky was a beautiful girl, and she knew how to make herself look older. She loved the attention she would get, especially from men. Her sister was just a year younger than Becky and looked up to Becky immensely, but she herself was more of a tomboy, so they kind of took two different directions as they grew up. Now, her sister told the hosts of Bayou Justice that she remembered a time when Becky was around 15 years old and a white limo pulled up to the house to pick her up. This limo was allegedly sent for Becky by the then Congressman Edwin Edwards. And yes, Becky was only 15 years old. At age 20, Becky gave birth to a little girl and she would settle into life as a single mom. She moved to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which was about 3.5 hours drive south of Shreveport. Baton Rouge is also the capital of Louisiana and, of course, the city where most of the congressmen and the governor resided. Becky and her daughter, for a while, lived in a building right near the Capitol, and rumors swirled around town that this building was where most of the men in the Louisiana government would house their mistresses. It seemed to be a well-known fact to the locals. This is also the same building where Sherry Lynn Daigle lived. Sherry was an 18-year-old who lived in the apartment right next door to Becky. In 1987, she was murdered, and her murder shocked everyone. She was only 18. Eventually, a man by the name of George Benny Brown was convicted of her murder, and it was said that he was interested in Sherry, but Sherry had rejected his advances, causing him to become violently angry and ultimately killing her. It also came to light that Sherry was 4 months pregnant at the time she died. Now, this seems to have nothing to do with Becky or any Louisiana government official, other than the fact that she lived in this building and maybe there were rumors that she was involved with someone. But it was after this murder that Becky started acting oddly. She started carrying around a manila envelope that she often took with her wherever she went, according to her daughter. She carried this manila envelope everywhere. In a conversation with her mother, she also commented that if anything ever happened to her, that envelope would be the key and it could be found taped underneath her mattress. She refused to elaborate any more on that. During this time, rumors had also swirled that Becky was still having an ongoing affair with the now governor, Edwin Edwards. Her family would say they knew this was occurring, and it had been occurring since Becky was a teenager. Becky's daughter even remembered him renting a room at the Inn on the Lake, and he would send her to the restaurant with his bodyguards, telling her to order whatever she wanted while he spent time with her mom. Edwin Edwards was a married man, but his extramarital relationships weren't exactly a secret in Louisiana during the 80s. He was nicknamed the Silver Zipper and had quite a reputation as a ladies' man. Becky didn't stay long at that apartment complex near the Capitol after Sherry's murder. She eventually moved to an apartment on Airline Highway, also still in Baton Rouge. The disappearance. On December 18, 1988, Becky put her daughter on a Greyhound bus and sent her to Shreveport, Louisiana to stay with family. Her daughter was not happy about this at the time, and they argued. Becky told her that she would be up to Shreveport as soon as she could. Now, we don't know if her intention was to be back in Shreveport for the holidays, perhaps. Christmas was just a week away. But Christmas came and went, and Becky never made it to Shreveport. However, on December 27th, 1988, just a week now after sending her daughter to Shreveport, Becky called her sister. She told her sister that Baton Rouge just wasn't working out for her, and she was moving back to Shreveport permanently. Again, she didn't give any further details during that conversation, and other than saying it just wasn't working out, Becky didn't give any indication that anything else was specifically wrong. On December 28th, 1988, just a day later, a neighbor became concerned about Becky's apartment. Now, the facts and the details and the timeline is a little bit muddled, and that happens often in cases that happened so long ago. But for some reason, the neighbor was concerned enough that they went to the apartment manager, and together they entered Becky's apartment. They did find the coffee pot turned on, in which they quickly turned it off. They noticed some dirty cups on the counter and a partially packed suitcase, but nothing else looked out of the ordinary, and they just figured Becky would be home eventually. They did find it odd that Becky's car was in the parking lot, but figured she must have just left with someone else. As days went by, Becky's family tried relentlessly now to reach her, unsuccessfully, and they were quite worried that no one had heard from her. Even if she did go for a few days, maybe even a few weeks without talking to family, she would never go that long without checking on her daughter. By the second week of January, Becky still hadn't been seen by any neighbors, and the landlord was trying to collect the rent as well. They found her lease agreement, and they called Becky's brother, who was listed as her emergency contact. He then made the trip to Baton Rouge to investigate and try to see what was going on with his sister. He entered the apartment with the apartment manager, and he found a little bit of a strange scene, especially now knowing that Becky had been missing. The apartment was just as it had been when the manager entered the apartment a couple weeks earlier, but her brother noticed some other things. First, her purse and her car keys were in the bedroom. Now, she might not have needed her car keys if someone else drove her, but most women don't leave home without their purse. Second, there was an autographed picture of Governor Edwin Edwards ripped up to shreds all over the kitchen counter. And then they found the bathtub full of water. Kind of odd, no? There wasn't any sign of a struggle per se. There wasn't any sign of foul play. They didn't find a note or anything from Becky indicating where she might have gone or was going. But it was now January 20th, 1989, and they decided they had to officially report Becky as missing. It had been 3 weeks since anyone had last talked to or seen Becky. Becky Gary had disappeared. The search and investigation. Becky's family wasn't sure where to begin, but they remembered Becky telling them about that manila envelope. When they searched her home for it, however, they couldn't find it anywhere. They looked under the mattress, as she had instructed, as well as all over the apartment, but it wasn't there. Investigators spoke to the apartment manager, who said they last saw Becky entering her apartment on Christmas Day. The last known confirmed day anyone saw or spoke to Becky was December 27th, when she spoke to her sister on the phone. It was pretty clear that Governor Edwards would need to be talked to, but, I mean, he was the governor of Louisiana at the time, and I suppose that was problematic enough. Governor Edwards denied any type of affair with Becky and said she was just a crazy fan of his who would write him letters. He even produced some of these letters to the authorities. And since there was no evidence that he knew anything about Becky's disappearance, police didn't suspect him of any involvement. Becky's boss and co-workers were interviewed at the restaurant that she had been working at. She had been waiting tables. While they didn't know much, they did state that they believed Becky had a new boyfriend and that a few weeks before she vanished, they had seen her at work with bruises. But no one knew who this boyfriend was. Aside from this information, clues in the investigation were few and far between, It was as if she had vanished into thin air. This was also 1988. There weren't any computer or cell phone trails to follow. There's no digital footprint, so to speak. And if authorities ever discovered anything else in her apartment, anything else relevant to the investigation, it was never disclosed publicly. Many wondered if the investigation into her disappearance was ever truly taken seriously, given her rumored involvement with Governor Edwards. Were authorities afraid to get involved? Were they instructed to not get involved? Now, I can definitely see why everyone would think this, and it seems fair, especially given Governor Edwards' reputation and, as you'll see, crimes. But again, there was no evidence that he had anything to do with Becky's disappearance at that time. Governor Edwards was governor for many years until his corruption caught up with him. In 2001, he was convicted of racketeering, money laundering, and conspiracy. He was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Edwin Edwards maintained his innocence in Becky's disappearance up until his death in July 2021. He was 93 years old. Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Baton Rouge is the capital city of Louisiana, located right along the Mississippi River. It's the second largest city in the state after New Orleans and is known for its rich history, diverse culture, and thriving industries. During the 1980s, Baton Rouge saw a notable increase in crime, particularly violent crime. The city was struggling with a rising homicide rate, driven in part by the crack cocaine epidemic that was truly affecting many urban centers across the United States, and drug trafficking and gang-related violence were also major contributors to the uptick in these violent offenses. In the early part of the decade, the city had a lower homicide rate compared to national average, but by the mid to late 80s, homicides began to climb sharply. This was attributed to both the drug trade and gang violence, as well as socioeconomic factors such as high unemployment and poverty. Now, in any case of a missing person, I always like to look at waterways or water sources in that area. So as for lakes and rivers, we actually have several. It is the hot and humid South, after all, and the Gulf of Mexico is about 200 miles to the south. In between, you'll find tons of water and swampland. But in addition to that, we have several bodies of water in and around Baton Rouge. First, we have the Mississippi River. The Mississippi River runs along Baton Rouge, serving as a vital waterway for commerce and recreation for the city. The city offers several parks and observation points where you can enjoy views of this iconic river. The Mississippi River is pretty huge in parts and can also be pretty deep. We have University Lake. University Lake is located near Louisiana State University. This University Lake is popular for recreational activities like fishing, kayaking, and even those just there to walk and enjoy the scenic views. Its proximity to the university makes it a favorite among students and locals. But at any given time, you'll find the place generally filled with college students. There's also City Park Lake, which is right adjacent to University Lake. The City Park Lake offers similar recreational activities. Both lakes were connected to the Mississippi River during the seasonal flooding, but have since become distinct bodies of water. Now, as I mentioned, there's also plenty of swamps and swamp land in the South in general, but particularly this area of the South. Specifically, you have the Blue Bonnet Swamp Nature Center, located right within Baton Rouge. It's a 103-acre facility dedicated to conservation, education, and recreation. Visitors can explore gravel pathways, boardwalks winding through the cypress swamps, and hardwood forests. Of course, this is a current day description of these areas. What did they truly look like back in the 80s? And with these swamps and swamplands and most of these freshwater bodies of water in the south, you'll find a lot of wildlife, which includes alligators. Within the city of Baton Rouge, Becky specifically lived on Airline Highway, also known as Route 61. We know Becky was at her apartment on December 27th when she called her sister, but where she went from there, we just don't know. It does appear as if she left the apartment in a hurry, leaving behind her purse and her keys. She also left the coffee pot turned on. And of course, it remains a mystery as to why the bathtub was full of water. But if she did leave the apartment with somebody else and in a hurry, it doesn't appear that any of her neighbors or any passerbys saw her or noticed her. Theories and possibilities. What are the theories in the case of Becky Gary? What are the possibilities? Well, number one, she left on her own. Did she just have enough of dealing with everyone and had to get away? Did she plan this by sending her daughter away 2 weeks before she possibly vanished? Her family doesn't believe she would have left her daughter. Plus, there's that issue of the strange way her apartment was left, with all of her belongings in a half-packed suitcase. And there has been no activity on her social security number, driver's license, or any type of banking. So, is it possible that she left on her own? Yes. Is it likely? Not in my opinion. Theory number two, foul play via the new boyfriend. Now, there was talk about a new boyfriend in her life, and coworkers remember seeing her coming to work with bruises. Was he violent towards her? Did he do something to Becky? Again, it's possible. It isn't clear, however, if anyone has ever identified who this person is. Theory number three, foul play in relation to the governor. The governor angle is interesting. It seems no one can argue that this man was corrupt. Many people will confirm that he had an affair with multiple women, including Becky. But there is no evidence that he was involved in her disappearance. Is it possible the discussions around the governor's involvement in her case is just a red herring? There's also that strange issue of the manila envelope. If it existed, where is it now and what did it contain that made Becky carry it around and protect it and tell her family that the answers would likely be inside if something happened to her? Theory number four, foul play via a stranger. This, to me anyway, also seems a bit unlikely, seeing as Becky seemed to be involved in perhaps some dangerous activity, whether she did intentionally or not. She was having an affair with the governor. There was this mysterious envelope. And there was the fact that she sent her daughter away weeks before. Again, is it possible that she met with foul play at the hands of a stranger? Did she encounter someone with malicious intent? Did someone come to her apartment to rob her and it went bad? There are no signs of this that we know of anyway. But is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? It doesn't seem so. What do you think happened to Becky Gary? Becky is described as a Caucasian female standing 5'2" tall and weighing around 105 pounds when she was last seen in December of 1988. Becky was 32 years old. She had shorter brown hair at the time, and she has brown eyes. Becky has a birthmark on her right leg near her knee, and she has a tattoo of a lion on her arm. If you have any information on the case of Rebecca, Becky, Pauline Gary, please contact the Baton Rouge Police Department at 225-389-8600. 1-7. Thank you for listening to Becky's story today. Another mystery that has been left unsolved for far too long. Becky's daughter remembers her last encounter with her mom on December 18th when Becky put her on that bus. She was mad and they had argued, and her daughter has had to live with that now for so many years. And while she knows, and we all know, that is pretty typical behavior for a 12-year-old and her mother to argue, it still hurts when she thinks of it to this day. There are a couple of other podcast episodes that have been done on Becky's case if you'd like another perspective on her story. Bayou Justice and the Unfound podcast each did an episode on Becky. We can all keep working together and help bring this family answers. If you've made it this far into the show and can appreciate the coverage to help these shows reach more people, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. This truly does help us reach a wider audience. Please make sure you are following us over on the socials as well. I'm hopeful for some big case updates soon, and we will try and announce them over there as soon as we know anything. You can find the Where Are They podcast on Instagram, Facebook, X, and YouTube. If you have any feedback or case suggestions for us, please send me an email to canwefindthem@gmail.com. We want to hear about those hometown cases that don't get the media coverage they need, the cases that don't always make mainstream media, those cases that could truly, really benefit from some exposure. A huge welcome and thank you once again to Elise, our newest Patreon member. Thank you so much for your support. If anyone is interested in ad-free episodes and bonus episodes, you can find all of that over on our Patreon page. The link will be in the show notes. Lastly, you can find all of our past episodes on our website, as well as some other write-ups on missing person cases. Our website can be found at wherearethepodcast.com. Thank you again for listening to Becky's story today. This family has been living without answers since 1988. Her daughter has grown up without her mother, and her siblings have lost their sister. Someone out there must know something. We will be back again very soon with another unsolved missing persons story. And until then, stay safe and hug your loved ones. We'll be right back.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.